back with the Killer Bees
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Broadcasting live from the Mobile Veritex Community Bank Studios located at Wakefield Crowbar. Here's Joel Blank and Brian McDonald.
Hey, one in the books, two to go. Second hour of the show opens up now. The Hive is alive, and we are at Wakefield Crowbar as we get into some NCAA talk. Also, a reminder, Wakefield Crowbar. Stop in and see us. We're here till 6. Stop in all weekend here as they got tons of specials while you watch the madness. This unbelievable TV wall in the back, the 24-footer, it's fantastic. Over 40 TVs all around the establishment. Phenomenal. Indoor, outdoor, you can also play some outdoor volleyball if you like, but at the same time, when you're watching the games, $19 Modelo Towers, $6 Margaritas, $3 Candy Shots, they have all kinds of things going on here all the time. It's a really cool spot. It's also a family spot. You can catch Easter brunch here, the Easter Bunny, believe it or not, yes, the kids can see the Easter Bunny. All great here at Wakefield Crowbar. So with that being said, BMAC, as a transition into our March Madness, we've been talking about it a little bit. We did a little draft yesterday, but now it's really going to get underway. And there was some basketball last night, but at the same time...
One of the teams didn't play basketball last night.
One of the teams should be looking for a new coach, and that's hard for me to say because...
Because they won a national title a few years ago.
Well, and because he's from Wisconsin, and because his dad is also a Wisconsin coaching legend.
There it is.
And the fact that I hate to say this, but that was an absolute embarrassment that set basketball back 40 years.
They're just, like, even when they win, they're just miserable to watch.
I mean,
and obviously we're talking about Virginia
Tony Bennett, the head coach, the Virginia Cavaliers were an embarrassment to basketball. I heard Dell talking about this. An hour of TV time, 14 minutes of actual game time, without a made basket by a team is inexcusable.
It's like kind of like making yourself watch Iowa football. That's really the only way I could.
Someone had a sweatshirt on last night that said Virginia basketball is Iowa football.
Yeah, it really
they're
is.
Not wrong.
No, it's just it's like I don't even care if they're good or if they're winning. They're just boring to watch. And I look. I don't think they should have even been in the play-in game. Certainly, if you look at the KenPom,
they didn't deserve to be in the tournament.
Yeah, certainly, if you look at the KenPom ratings, they were way down. There are a few other teams like St. John's. I know Rick Pitino's upset about it, but there are several teams that were ranked way higher in the KenPom ratings. Yeah, and Virginia showed it last night. You know, the ball don't lie. The ball didn't lie last night. Virginia got absolutely trounced by Colorado State.
My big thing too was for Pitino, for Indiana State fans, for the teams that thought they should be in. Just be better so that you're not on the bubble next year. Because I do hear people saying, you know, Virginia's just a recruit or two away with the returning guys they got of being right back in it next year. Well, prove it to me because
I hope not.
If you're Tony Bennett in that postgame press conference and you made the quote about, hey, we're evaluating our entire system internally right now because we got to – you damn well need to say things like that to save your ass because your job should be on the line with the way that they played all year leading into getting lucky enough and because of the reputation of their university and their team, getting in only to get bounced out like that, that's an embarrassment for basketball.
Yeah, and I just think it's a low percentage way to play basketball. Look, I get the takes and the ideas that will be put forth by the opponents of that style of play, and certainly maybe there's a team here locally that plays something similar to that, not quite the same. But when you're limiting possessions that much, you're just forcing yourself to be so much more efficient and seemingly kind of forcing the other team, unless you're perfect, to be able to keep them in the game with you. Like, when you limit possessions that much, to me, you just open yourself far up more for upsets. We saw that, obviously, a couple years ago when they were at one seed that got upset by 16. So, I'm not a fan of that style of basketball, and I'm glad at least that the main March Madness bracket won't be tainted by the stink that Virginia puts up there every game.
So being a better producer than we've ever had on the Killer Bees, you...
I love you, Joe.
That's one of us. One of the things that you are challenged with that you do for us is you dig up some of these stories that we can get into and talk about, like as it relates to the tournament in this case, and the fact that people always think that they have a formula. And obviously, so many people do brackets, and they're waiting and hanging on every word of Jay Billis, Seth Davis, all the quote-unquote NCAA know-it-alls to try and figure out who's the sleeper, who's the Cinderella, who's the one seed that's going to be the best, and who's the one that's going to fall off first. All questions that America wants answered, are they turning to the right spots? Is there a formula that works?
So I, I, there's obviously with the madness that the bracket can be, there's no perfect formula. There's no perfect right answer that's going to be right all the time. But I think you can look at historical trends and at least know, you know, the kind of the hot spots to avoid and the places to take your shots on. So specifically first, like with upsets, I think sometimes people either fall into a trap of either not picking any upsets or just picking way too many because that's, you know, that's where the fun is. Right, I mean, it's fun to predict the 14 seed and say you called it. But when you're trying to win a bracket, like obviously the points that you get for each pick increase round by round, it's really important to have those really good teams still available to get you those higher point seeds later. So I think you got to look at what's most likely, and what's most likely is your 10, 11, and 12 seeds.
Yeah, it's predictability versus probability, right?
That's where the percentages are.
The biggest upsets always say, look at the 11s,
10, 11, 12. Like those
are ones. Probability is, when do the high seeds start falling off? Who's vulnerable because of injury, like Kansas?
Yeah, Kansas will be a popular upset pick.
What a lot of people have said early on, the hot teams to make a run, James Madison.
Yeah, they're mentioned a lot.
New Mexico.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
And then the one that's supposed to pull the one-game upset is Kansas is a wounded animal. So if you're Samford, a lot of people are thinking you capitalize by getting Kansas first. You have a chance to beat them and send them home and be the big upset Cinderella early on.
Yeah, I think Kansas is certainly on upset alert. Historically, as I was talking about, they technically fall outside that range. They're facing Samford, who is a 13 seed. And where you see like the high percentage of upsets, like I said, 10, 11, 12, those teams have north of 30% odds historically to go ahead and pull off the upset. It didn't dramatically drops once you get to the 13 seeds and lower. But the injury for Kansas and their star player certainly changes everything.
Because you have one of the star players already ruled out.
Right.
You've got another in Hunter Dickinson who is questionable and if he plays with his shoulder injury, how effective is he going to be being able to shoot the basketball and be a part of all that? They've been dinged up all year long. So when you look at it from a Kansas perspective, yeah, there's still talent there, but are they talented enough to not have their full complement? Even if you're playing a Samford, that's one thing, and maybe they get by that game. But even if they get by that game, the level of competition that you're going to start playing.
Now you get, what is it? No, it's not Duke in the second. Is it Duke in the second round that they would get? I'd have to look at the bracket. But it's another high-quality team.
Yeah.
Obviously, they're a four seed. They're going to be playing a five seed after that. So, yeah, I would.
And Duke is the, I believe Duke is the five seed.
That might be correct.
Or it's Wisconsin and Duke are 4-5.
Yeah, we can look it up during the break. But yeah, I don't know what your bracket has, but I don't have Kansas getting to the Sweet 16.
I don't
either. When you look at where the upsets come, like again, it's the 10, 11, 12. You have an average of over one of those per season. So if you're going to pick upsets, pick it there. And I'd also say we have a streak now of what is it? So since 2011. At least one team, seven seed or higher, has made the Final Four. I mean, that, except for 2019, there was one year in there where a seven seed or higher didn't make the Final Four. So certainly, find your dark horse. And I'm curious, Joel, when you look at this bracket, look and see where there's some vulnerabilities from some of these higher seeds that might get upset. Where do you point to for dark horses that you like?
I'm going to flip the script, Brian.
I'm going to
flip the script, but to answer your question, I'm not looking for a higher seed that's vulnerable. I'm looking for a lower seed that got ranked appropriately but had so many injuries and now they're healthy to the point where they can flip the script.
That's fair.
I think the Oregon Ducks are that team.
Yeah.
I think Oregon's been beat up all season long. Their head coach, Dana Altman, he has never been in a tournament where he doesn't like overachieve and do a lot more than people anticipate. I think they have a ton of talent. I think the bracket sets up well for them. And if I'm looking at one team that might be that 11 seed that shakes everything up, I'm looking at Oregon.
Yeah, there's a couple teams I'm looking at. Certainly Oregon is a live dog. Now, this is not necessarily underdog. It's a very, very name brand basketball team. But Michigan State, I'm high on picking them to go maybe further than they would be projected just on seed. I mean, obviously,
hey, coaching.
Izzo's
in the mix, you got to
right. You obviously start with Tom Izzo. He had that streak for a long time where every guy that had, stayed there 4 years went to a Final Four. But then you look at their draw. They've got Arizona in their bracket, historically Arizona has been a team full of disappointments.
Really good,
Alabama's defense has been really bad this year. I don't see them as some unstoppable juggernaut. And then the one seed on their side, UNC, I mean, UNC obviously a one seed, but you look at their, or Alabama's actually, sorry, this is Alabama's record against top half quad one teams 1-8. So, I mean, really, you look at two challenges in that bracket for Michigan State, and that's UNC and that's Baylor. So I think Michigan State is a live dog. And the other one I like, and I'm gonna call out my own favorite team on this one, but Colorado State, they have the momentum of winning a first four game.
Yep.
Last night they were the team that knocked out Virginia. And then when you look at their bracket, they face Texas in the first round. Look, I'm a Longhorn fan, but I don't believe in Rodney Terry right now. I think they're certainly gettable in a 10-7 matchup. And then if Colorado State wins that game, they get to face Tennessee, and we know Rick Barnes' history in the tournament. I mean, Rick Barnes has a long, long history of disappointing in the NCAA tournament. So I think Colorado State could be in for a surprise 16 run.
All right, so the flip side, a lot of people casually doing their brackets like to do, as they say, stick to all chalk. Just all the favorites all the way through. Shannon Sharp, I would say, is this guy because he did predictions for both the men's and women's brackets.
Yeah.
And remarkably, ones
yeah.
in on both tournaments for his final four. If you're looking at number ones and the number one that you think might fall off first, Brian McDonald, who are you looking at?
I think we both have the same answer. And it's important to find one number one seed to fall off because there's only been once in the entire history of the tournament where all four number one seeds made it. And that was 2008, I believe, in San Antonio when Kansas won it all over Memphis in the final.
I was there.
Yeah, that was a fantastic game with Mario Chalmers hitting the big shot to send them to overtime. So it's only happened once in history that all four number one seeds missed it. And I think it's the obvious one, right? It's Purdue. I mean, 3 years in a row they've lost to a double-digit seed. And I just don't trust their style of play. You get a team that can take their big man out of the paint, maybe spread them out with guard play, shoot threes on them. I think they're good. I could see them getting to the Sweet 16. I don't see them getting to the Final Four. I don't see them.
I watched them lose to Wisconsin in overtime. I know they're vulnerable. I know that Eddie is everybody's, you know, go-to guy to watch. Obviously, a big player of the year candidate.
Do you enjoy watching him play, though?
But I've watched him play.
I know.
And I think he's gotten better over his entire career there. But the one thing we know about him and this team and his head coach, Painter, is the fact that they're a regular season team. And when they get to the big dance, they're a different team that looks vulnerable all the time. And I think that their style of play is so predicated, to your point, about pounding it into him. If he gets in foul trouble, if, God forbid, he gets injured, if he's not at the top of his game, I don't know if they're talented enough around him to carry the load if they have to. And I think there are a lot of teams in his bracket that are well-coached, that have a lot of, like, the complementary talent that's able to not rely on just one guy like they do so much.
Yeah, and you mentioned the coaches in the bracket. He has Mark Few and Greg McDermott in his bracket. So certainly you got some experienced programs like Creighton and Gonzaga with experienced coaches. And like you said, I think Purdue, because of their style of play, is far more prone to bad style matchups than the other number one seeds.
Except for one, and I think we're going to get to that next, because I think that we'll talk about the one that we think is going to be the favorite or should be there at the end, and then the one other team that's a number one that's kind of like Kansas that might be vulnerable, not because they don't lack talent, but because where they sit currently with their state of health. We'll talk about all that as we continue to roll on. It is the Killer Bees. It's Brian McDonald and Joel Blank live from Wakefield Crowbar. If you guys want to join us, come on out, stop in, say hi. We'll be here till 6 p.m. And, of course, be here all weekend for all the madness as they've got lots of drink specials and tons of TVs. More coming up next. It's the Hive being alive with the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5.
Broadcasting live from the Mobile Veritex Community Bank Studios located at Wakefield Crowbar, here's the Killer Bees, Joel Blank and Brian McDonald.
Hey, Jeremy's out today traveling on the way to Memphis, Tennessee, where the Cougs will be in action this weekend. He will join us via remote tomorrow, be back on the program. So Brian McDonald and I got you till 6 p.m. at Wakefield Crowbar. Stop in, see us, see the oodles and oodles of people that are going to come here and hang out and drink and eat and be merry in this great environment. We were talking about the tournament, and all weekend they've got tons of specials here, so you need to check them out, drink specials and otherwise. Tons of TVs, the big 24-foot wall. But, Brian, the one thing we haven't touched on yet in terms of, we talked about Cinderella's, we talked about potential upsets. Now let's talk about just overall that whole chalk number one line. if we're talking about the fact that the number ones, who do you got winning it, and who could be the most vulnerable? Yeah, I think Purdue is the most vulnerable because of their style of play.
Yeah, okay.
But at the same time, the X factor for me is health. Purdue's healthy. Carolina's healthy. UConn is healthy.
Well, there's one team left.
U of H is not healthy.
Yeah.
So that's why it was a struggle for me, as much as I'm pulling for U of H, as much as I want U of H, I need the fans to be realistic in, you lost three really important cogs in your wheel that are part of this team, and you've got another one that's dinged up. That's gonna, Roberts is going to give you all he's got, but between the shin and then the hand injury, you got to wonder what he can truly give you, and God forbid he gets in foul trouble, because the options behind him, they ain't great. So you also have the vulnerability of on the negative side. From time to time, this team struggles when their shots aren't falling.
Sure.
And looking for a go-to guy that's going to go to the bucket and get shed is the closest thing to it. Cryer struggled with it early, found it for a while, has been okay since. But when you look at the combination of all those things, I think U of H is vulnerable. On the positive, why I think they'll still survive, because defense travels. Because no matter what size the gym and who the opponent is and who they're going to face along the way, potentially it could be Duke, it could be Wisconsin, it could be teams like that. Their defense is suffocating. Their defense makes you change your game plan no matter what you want to do offensively. And they have enough talent on their side of the ball to score, to get up and down the floor, and to kind of get you into submission mode.
Yeah, I don't see it like an early upset for them. Certainly, obviously.
How deep?
Not round one.
When do they become vulnerable?
I say Sweet 16. That would be the first time I'd be concerned about them. Round two, I'll just speak for my own bracket. I would have them facing A&M in round two.
Yeah.
I don't look. Steve,
it's a team they've already beaten, but they were healthy.
They were healthy, and that was a long time ago. That was
at Toyota Center.
Right. That was a neutral site. I believe in December as part of that.
Yes, it was December.
The Despot series with Texas playing LSU as well. Yeah, I know Stephen A. Smith had Texas A&M in his Final Four. I question how many A&M games he's actually watched. Certainly, I've heard a lot of them working here at a station that carries their games. But I don't see A&M being a team that would beat UH unless there's some other injury in the first round that will further damage the Cougars' depth or obviously take out one of their stars. So I have them in the Sweet 16. Then it's, you're facing Wisconsin or Duke in my bracket. You know, sorry, I do have I have it as Duke in my bracket. Look, I mean, some of the scouting reports you read on Duke is maybe they're not the most physical team. And so I do worry, and like if I was a Duke fan, I would worry about getting out bullied by the UH team that plays as tough a defense as UH.
Is where referees and how they call the game
exactly.
is a massive factor.
If the game is called tight, then that keeps Duke in. If the refs are letting a little more go, I think UH gets past that.
Okay, wait, time out. Because I'm hearing what you're saying. Because I've actually said these kind of things to Jeremy, though.
Okay.
Filipowski is the kind of guy that if they get in foul trouble, or that if he can get Roberts in foul trouble because he shoots the three and he's active and he's big, that could cause a wealth of problems for a backcourt that can match. They've got talent in their backcourt like U of H does. Maybe not completely as much, but Duke is a scary matchup for me because they're well coached and they got a big that could cause some problems for U of H.
So what is, besides Filipowski, what would be what, I guess, scares you about Duke the most for UH?
Well, I think they've got a lot of talent. You know, they recruit five stars every year. They've got NBA guys are going to play on the next level in their rotation of six or seven guys. And because they have that big, and because the U of H lacks depth at the big position because of injury, I think that's where it starts to get scary for me.
So of all the teams they could face beyond that point, I think you also have to throw in the conversation Marquette, Texas Tech, potentially Kentucky. Is Duke the team that worries you the most as far as being able to upset the Cougars, or is it one of those three teams I mentioned? Kentucky?
I think Kentucky, again, it's similar to Duke, but on a grander scale. We know that Cal doesn't coach his tail off. Cal recruits his tail off. And Cal's going to have a lot of one-and-dones and a lot of NBA guys doing things his way, and they're playing good basketball right now. They're hot at the right time. They've got a boatload of talent. That's a team depth-wise that can run you into the ground, that has bigs that can play with theirs, and can get you into foul trouble. Again, how the game's officiated matters in games against Duke and Kentucky for U of H. I think their biggest vulnerability to not making it to the Final Four, in my opinion, is Kentucky.
Yeah, I could see that being the case. I have maybe this is an overconfidence that I have in the Cougars. I have confidence in their style of play traveling. I know it's maybe similar to Virginia, so you can make some of the same arguments about limiting possessions and that inviting teams back into the game. I just think their style of play is a style of play that doesn't often go cold. I know they do have some offensive stretches where they don't hit shots, and Shedd is not the highest percentage of shooters. I just, unless there's another injury or unless the refs start to dictate the game, I have confidence in the Cougars at least getting to the Elite Eight.
Yeah, I think, like I said, when I looked at it, if healthy, this team is capable of running it all, and I wouldn't have them in this conversation.
Yeah, they're capable of winning it all,
for sure. But to me, the one team that I've been very staunch on all year as being the most talented team in the NCAA, regardless of whether they win it or not, again, is UConn.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
I can't stand Hurley as a coach. I think he goes over the top. He's had incidents when he's been here in Houston in the past that made him look like
blowing up at referees and players.
Yeah. And fans. But that team is so talented, and they have bigs, they have wings, they have everybody at every position that you would need them to be. So if I'm going to say the favorite, they got it right. I think the overall number one is exactly who it should have been. UConn is the team to beat, but if there's a team to beat them, I do believe that it is U of H.
Oh, so you think the Cougars are the toughest challenge potentially?
Yeah, I think the team most
capable of upsetting
Hurley
UConn.
Will coach circles around Calipari in a big game.
I would agree with that.
So
yeah.
It's UConn, and if it's not UConn to me, it's U of H, and I got those two teams in the final.
UConn is just so deep. I mean, they got five players over 10 points per game. Obviously, they have the not every player, but they have the experience of last year. Not every player, obviously. Some of them left, but they got experience from last year. And there's one odd trend. I was looking at this when I was trying to find statistical trends for the NCAA tournament. Obviously, the high majority of titles are won by number one seeds. It's something like half over the last however many years. But there's been a weird thing where they're not winning it back-to-back. One seeds aren't winning it back-to-back. It's usually a lower seed than a one seed, lower seed than a one seed. Well, last year, UConn, the fourth seed, won the national title, and the statistics show you that this year would be the turn for the one seed, and they're now number one seed.
Yeah, it's
that doesn't mean anything, it's just a fun thing to look at.
I don't believe in betting on back-to-backs, but in my bracket, I do have U of H.
I have UConn winning it all.
I have UConn and U of H in the final, and I have UConn winning it as well. And that's because I don't believe U of H is going to be healthy the entire tournament. So there's that for what it's worth. If you guys want to chime in, 713-780-3776. You can call, text, hit us up on Twitch, hit us up on YouTube. We're on all those available opportunities for you, and we'll continue to roll through the second half of the show as we've reached the midway point. And before we go to the break, I do want to tell you about my good friends at Allstate Siding and Windows. Look, I just recently had new windows put in my house by Allstate Siding and Windows, and I can tell you this, it's a game changer. From the cosmetic curb appeal of my house, it looks like a modern, brand-new house, and the look is absolutely fantastic. But the bigger thing for me as a family is, one, the contents, including my family, are going to be safe and secure because these windows, they are going to be able to withstand the elements from the heat of the summer, the cold of the winter, and hurricane season here in Houston, as we all know far too well. These windows are fantastic. And then on top of that, they have the ability to save you up to 40% on your energy bills. That's a game changer, folks, because no matter what you pay for the windows, you're going to start getting that money back in return by all the money that you're going to save. They are family run and owned and operated for three generations for almost 50 years. Mary, Mike, the family, they're fantastic. Mary's going to handle the everything back at the headquarters. Mike's going to come out to your house possibly directly and tell you exactly what they can do and how they can help. And they've got tons of discounts all the time. Right now you can get 24 months interest-free, 30% off on all windows. You mention us because they love us. They will love you even more. Check them out today. Call them. Just have them come out to the house. See what they can do. 832-204-1936 or connect with them online. AllstateWindowsAndSiding.com.
The Killer Bees are broadcasting live from inside the Mobile Veritex Community Bank Studios, located at Wakefield Crowbar. Now back to Joel Blank and Brian McDonald.
Back at Wakefield Crowbar as we get the second half of the show underway. It is Joel Blank and Brian McDonald. Jeremy covering the Cougs. We'll be back with us tomorrow via remote, but until then, we are via remote at the Wakefield Crowbar, where it's the best spot that you can watch March Madness and get everything going all weekend long if you're in the Heights area. Fantastic location. Great food, great beverages, great specials, tons of TVs, over 40 to be exact, and a monster 24-footer in the back.
I'm glad you said 24-footer, because earlier today Joe said 24-incher. And it's like, that would be a tiny TV, Joe.
That kind of, in a nutshell, sums up the logical of Joe George.
That's like the TV I had growing up in the 90s with the big back end, those super heavy TVs.
Backloaded. Like,
I remember being thrilled about having a 24-inch TV, but we've upgraded over the years.
Joe understands backloading. but anyway, as we get into the second half of the program, Look, we've covered the Rockets, we've covered the Astros, we've covered March Madness, and we've got to cover our Houston Texans because they continue to make moves. They are continuing to get better, and they are getting ready as they continue to get through free agency for the draft and an upcoming season that we all should be excited about. One of the big additions in the last 24 hours is Derek Barnett's going to be back.
Yeah, he's back.
A guy that we were worried about, we were thinking about, we were saying, hey, he's probably going to get himself a healthier contract than what the Texans are willing to offer because of what he showed once he put on the red, white, and blue. But alas, he's coming back, and he adds even more pass rush opportunities for the Texans.
Yeah, when you look at the depth of this roster now for the edge rushers, obviously your starters are Danielle Hunter and Will Anderson Jr. You add Derek Barnett back. You add Mario Edwards a couple of days ago, and I don't see there being like I think the conversation we had the other day, like when we were doing the mock drafts and what you might consider in the second round, like we. At least Jeremy, I know you don't remember who that is right now, but Jeremy was at least keeping the idea open for maybe there might be an edge rusher taken by the Texans in the second round to continue to add to that position. But with the additions of Mario Edwards and Derek Barnett added back to the roster, I don't want to say they're completely done at edge rusher, but I couldn't see them using a second-round pick on edge rusher at this point. They've got their starters. They got their depth. That doesn't seem, unless somebody crazy that you didn't expect slips you at 42, the pick you got from the Minnesota Vikings, I don't see that being as an efficient use of your draft capital to take an edge rusher at 42.
No, I said this yesterday. I'll say it again. I think the four positions that they're going to look at with the two picks they have in the second round to hopefully fill with some form of either depth or starter would be safety, wide receiver, defensive lineman. Sorry, safety, corner, defensive lineman.
Defensive tackle?
Meaning a defensive tackle, okay. Yes. Interior defensive lineman. And then in my opinion, it would be either receiver or offensive line. I would like them to look at a guard. I think because of what they've already done in free agency, kicking the tires on guys, I think it'll be receiver. I think it'll be receiver, corner, safety, and interior defensive line.
I would like to agree with you. I don't like going into the season basically running back the exact same wide receiver core because while Nico Collins and Tank Dell are great as your one and two, like I have no concerns, no issue with those guys being your one and two. You know, bringing back Noah Brown as they did. Obviously, Robert Woods still on the roster this time. He hasn't been a cap casualty at this point. You still have Xavier Hutchinson and John Metchie on the roster. We saw what happened last year. One injury completely wrecked the efficiency and the consistency of the wide receiving core. Tank Dell went down after breaking his leg being a fullback for some reason in that home game for the Houston Texans. Look, I mean, Nico Collins still had some outbursts, but you couldn't really rely consistently on what you're getting from Hutchinson. You couldn't rely on what you're getting from John Metchie. Robert Woods had some injury issues. Noah Brown had some injury issues and also wasn't super consistent. I just don't like going into the season running back the exact same crew and knowing you're one injury away from, oh, crap, here we go again.
Yeah, I think that they showed their cards to some degree already when looking at possibly trading for Keenan Allen. When looking into T. Higgins.
That would have been awesome.
When trying to find out what they needed to find out about how they could possibly add a high caliber wide receiver to what they already have. Because I think, to your point, they know this team's too good, this quarterback's too talented to not give him weapons no matter who's hurt and who's not by adding more depth. That's why I truly believe, and we've had this, Jeremy's on the opposite side of this thinking they're going to keep Robert Woods. I'd cut him. Robert Woods, to me, should be gone because I think even with whatever his contract was, you saved that $5 million. For whatever his contract was in that $5 million, you can get yourself a better version of Robert Woods for C.J. Stroud. I believe that that's why I would cut Jimmy Ward. I would cut Robert Woods. I'm still looking at safety, and I'm looking at specifically to the receiver. Ways to upgrade in the draft and still with a free agent guy that might be affordable, that might be out there, ways that you can upgrade these weapons for C.J.
Yeah, like specifically the 2 second-round picks, I probably wouldn't do safety there.
I'm thinking if I have my wish, it's corner and interior defensive line.
Yeah, I'd be fine with that. Like corner, wide receiver, and then interior offensive line, interior defensive line would be the four positions I think that would be on my big board there with your 2 second-round picks. Safety, honestly, I think I'd rather spend a free agent and get a veteran in. But it's a position to me that's not quite devalued to the point of a running back, but been devalued over the years. So I think you're better off probably looking if you're drafting a safety, maybe the third round compared to the second round. Plus, look, I don't really want Jimmy Ward as my starter, but I think you have a better option there if you don't add somebody than you do at some of those other positions.
Yeah, it is going to be interesting to watch. I just feel like they've spent so much attention, and I believe they're going to move Autry around. I believe that
say move him around, you mean like as an edge rusher?
He's going to go to the edge. He's going to come back inside.
I'd be interested to see how that works, because I can't imagine the scenario where you're taking Hunter or Will Anderson off the edge.
No, but I think that there are times whether it's a series they take off or you do a rotation.
Sure.
Rotationally, you're going to have a lot of guys to stay fresh with the way D'Amico wants to play defense. But I do believe with those 2 second-round picks specifically that I would like them to focus on if Sweat falls to them in the second round with the first of the two picks, go get him. We've talked to enough guys that have told us this is a very deep corner draft. If one of those corners starts slipping, if a couple of those corners start slipping to where you can get a starting caliber corner in the second round, that's what I would love with the Texans' actual pick. You get a corner and a defensive lineman with your 2 second-round picks. Now I think you're really cooking with gas.
Yeah, I think corner would be my first priority, because I look at some of the other positions, and while there's definitely a need there, there's definitely a reason to improve it. Like, if they don't spend a second-round pick on interior offensive linemen, you still have some names there that, you know, I feel at least semi-comfortable with. They've played decently in the NFL. Same thing for safety. Same thing for defensive line. They've added some names in free agency that you're at least willing to try out and see how it works, especially trusting in D'Amico and his ability to coach up that side of the ball. The opposite of that is corner. Like, I don't see anyone after Derek Stingley on this Texans roster that I feel comfortable being a starting corner for them. I mean, you're starting to get to the point where, look, Stevie Nelson is still out there.
I was just going to say that.
He wasn't obviously my first choice when the offseason began, but the market has basically told Stevie Nelson, like, we don't think you're worth what you think you're worth. So if Stevie Nelson now, I believe at age 32, the market's rejected
him. So you beat me to it, but here's the question.
Okay.
Who's holding the cards if you reconvene with Stevie Nelson? Is it that he had the reality check? He wasn't going to be sought after as much as he thought. He wasn't going to get the money he thought he deserved. And he puts tail between the legs and he comes back looking for less? Or are you looking at it going, I still need Stevie Nelson. He knows my system. He knows D'Amico. And I'm gonna pick up the phone and say, hey, we still want to talk to you. We want to bring you back.
I would definitely say the latter. Like, I think the Houston Texans have to realize they have an opportunity now. Stevie Nelson has had the market basically reject him as the type of player he thinks he is.
Do you think it's advantage Texans?
Yeah, I do think it's advantage Texans, and I think it'll play out in their favor. Now, the question will be, because of Stevie Nelson's past, which obviously includes the clown freak comment against Nick Caserio and the way he dressed, if Stevie Nelson, believing what he's worth, I don't know. We'll have to see. This is obviously something that's, you know, different person to person, player to player. But I don't know if the ego and maybe the pride would stand in the way of, like, okay, I basically told them I'm this guy, and now the rest of the league is telling me that they were right and I was wrong. I don't know if the pride and the ego will allow him to come back to the same team that he was with in that scenario. I hope that's not true. And it certainly, I think, is advantage Texans if they can get him back on a 1 or 2 year
deal. But you
got to
find a home at a certain point. That's what I said. You got to put tail between legs and go.
I'm just saying, if there's, I guess what I'm saying is, if, you know, throw any random team out there. Let's just say Tampa Bay for the sake of argument. If Houston offers you a deal, Tampa Bay offers you the same deal. I just could see a scenario where your pride and your ego, look, I can't go back to the same team where I called them out for not signing me, and then I got nothing. I'm going to go to a new place, and I have to face that
I think money talks.
I'm saying same deal.
Comfortability and winning matters, and I think that if you get two teams like that, I think the chance to go farther with a system you already know and still be a player that could show out, you would probably take Houston over Tampa, but it would be interesting to see. I don't know if they're going to get there or not, but I think he's something that you still got to consider. We're going to continue to roll on. We've got many more things to get to. I mean, where do you think the Texans are so far in what they've done with this offseason? Where do you think that they fall because of the guys they brought in, they've let go, and how does that rank in the AFC? We've got a certain column from a certain outlet that's going to tell you the Texans are the third best team in the AFC right now. Do you believe that? Are they higher? Are they lower? Let us know. 713-780-3776. You can call, you can text, you can use YouTube or Twitch to get to the program. We are going to roll on, but before we get to the break, I want to tell you again about my good friend Doc Linville. Doc Linville, best in the business at the NeoGraft procedure. How do I know? Because I've had it. And the NeoGraft procedure is getting your hair back. It's not the sprays and the creams and the foams that mask the problem. No, it's your own hair. Genetically, you're never going to lose the hair on the sides and the back of your head. Doc Linville told me that when he wanted to sit down with me. I had a consultation. You can have the same consultation I had with Doc and his staff. It's going to cost you absolutely nothing. Normally, the people off the street pay $150. You listen to us. You go to 975hair.com. You get a free consultation with Doc Linville and his staff. You ask questions. You get answers. You find out what I did, and I made the decision to do it because it was the right thing to do for me. I think it's a game changer. You get your hair back. In no time at all, when they're done with the procedure, you see the follicles there. 6 to 9 months later, they are stronger. They are longer. They're there for the long haul because genetically, like I told you, they ain't going anywhere because the sides in the back of your head never go away. 95 to 99% of the follicles that are moved stay, grow, longer, stronger, there for you for the rest of your life. That's why I did the procedure. Check him out today and tell him I sent you by because I think he's the best in the business, and he's got all kinds of specials going on, too. Go to 975hair.com.
And with the local DBC News, LL Cool J with a triumphant comeback. More a solo. But tonight...
You're back with the Killer Bees.
On ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Broadcasting live from the Mobile Veritex Community Bank Studios located at Wakefield Crowbar. Here's Joel Blank and Brian McDonald.
Hey, Jeremy covering the Cougs will be with us via remote tomorrow, but for today it's me and BMAC at Wakefield Crowbar, as our sound guy tells you, and we are having a good time. You guys can too. We're here till 6. And then you guys could be here all weekend for March Madness. They got tons of drink specials, lots of TVs, cool indoor-outdoor environment in the Heights. Check them out. We were talking about the Texans prior to getting to the break, and I teased it, but CBS ranks the Texans now as the third-best team in the AFC after where we are so far with free agency.
Right.
Chiefs are one. Ravens are two.
No surprise there, right? Not,
well, depending on the order, but because the Chiefs are the reigning Super Bowl champs.
Or at least
champs,
who the top two are.
Right, those two probably deserve that. Interesting, the Texans have surpassed the Bills, the Browns, the Bengals, and the Dolphins, who are 4-7, all AFC teams. Are you good with where they sit, and what do you think of what the Texans have done so far?
Yeah, my first thought is that's a lot of confidence. Or let me come at it from a different direction. I think that's a very short-term memory on what the Bengals are. I mean, I understand they obviously weren't a playoff team last year, but Ja'Marr Chase missed, five games. Joe Burrow wasn't right the first few games of the season, and then he got hurt and missed the second half of the season. So, look, the Bengals have been a team that have gone into Buffalo and won. They're a team that's gone into Kansas City and won. Burrow is who a lot of people who are pro C.J. Stroud going into the draft compared him to, like what his upside to is. I mean, Burrow has been there and done that in places and things that C.J. Stroud hasn't done yet. So I think my first reaction is it's probably overlooking the Bengals too much, and I would probably drop the Texans below them and have the Texans at fourth. But I think it's a confidence ranking really in quarterback. Like, I mean, you have Lamar Jackson, a two-time MVP. You obviously have the three-time Super Bowl champ in Patrick Mahomes. And I think people are telling you that they see C.J. Stroud as that next tier.
So here's where I'm at with this so far to this point, Brian, is you don't know what you don't know. So I hear what you're saying, but I don't know what I don't know about Burrow coming off an injury. I don't know what I don't know about T. Higgins in that situation. Is it going to get worked out? Are they going to trade him?
Higgins
is he
going to
be back? Because if he's back... Then with those two weapons, assuming Burrow is who we think he's going to be, then I hear you. I'm right there with you in terms of the Bengals being right back there in the mix. The other team to me that I think that is worth a discussion where they rank with the Texans, and again, you don't know what you don't know about Buffalo because you don't know how they're going to replace Gabe Davis. And you,
you also don't know if Stephon Diggs is going to be there. Because it feels like every other week he's posting some cryptic social media post where he's putting, you know, song lyrics up or some emoji up that seems to indicate he wants out of town.
But that's where I was going as well. You don't know what, how the Diggs situation plays out. You don't know if the final six games with a new offensive coordinator is going to translate to a new and improved running game with Cooks and everybody for another year. And you don't know what they're going to do in the draft to try and replace some of the players they've moved on from defensively, particularly when you've got a guy that's meant so much to them like Poyer at the back of their secondary. So those are the teams that I think are in the conversation with the Texans. And then on top of that, the other thing is home field matters and situation matters. In the playoffs, as good as CJ is and or was, we knew it was cold in Baltimore. Can you win in Buffalo? Can you win where it's snowy and it's nasty and the weather's terrible and they've been there and they've done it? Can you win in Baltimore where you – I think the weather did affect them to some degree, but I also think what they had on the field was an issue too. So that factors in for me as well.
Yeah, and obviously they scored zero touchdowns in two games against the Baltimore Ravens this year. So I have no problem with the Ravens being being ahead of the Texans. I do, and look, this is a tough argument to make right now because Lamar Jackson has two MVP awards. C.J. Stroud has obviously zero. But I would take C.J. Stroud going forward over Lamar Jackson. Really the only two quarterbacks in the AFC that I would take over C.J. Stroud going forward would be Mahomes and Burrow. So I'm fine. I think it's totally fair to have the Texans at three. There's certainly a lot of question marks. And you mentioned, like, you don't know what you don't know. I do think the Bills take a step back, though. I do have some of the same concerns as you of them winning in those cold weather environments, about them going on the road in tough places and prevailing. They haven't done that so far in the playoffs. I don't think they're going to have to go to Buffalo. I think Buffalo, for all the reasons we've talked about, is going to take a step back. You lost Gabe Davis, you lost Jordan Poyer, you lost some other pieces. Stephon Diggs might be gone. And I don't even know if transitioning to this run-heavy style will be something that's favorable for them.
That's what I'm questioning, but I'm also looking at it from the perspective of weapons matter, right? And CJ needs all of his weapons. So you're going to need your guys. That's why I think they're still looking at wide receiver, because they're thinking who they have to beat and what they have to do to get to that next level against the teams that are sitting at that next level and or above it. They know, like you mentioned, what they had to struggle with against Baltimore. They know the Chiefs is that's a totally different animal. You're going to deal with the elements and the cold and the weather too, but you're dealing with the best quarterback in the game. And regardless of who walked out the door receiver-wise, he makes every receiver better. And he's been there and done that too many times to mention, to where that is a massive giant to slay. You're going to have all, you click on all cylinders and have better weapons overall for CJ than you had a year ago. So that's why when you look at it to this point, D'Amico knew, first and foremost, no matter what defense travels, we got to upgrade the defense. But at some point, you still have to look at another running back, another receiver, and that left guard situation.
Yeah, and some of that obviously could be answered in the draft. By the time we have this conversation again, some of those questions could have been answered favorably. I think it shows a confidence in C.J. Stroud because, look, we obviously think, you know, very, very positive thoughts right now about Nico Collins and Tank Dell, but we weren't saying that necessarily, a year ago this time. We weren't thinking Nico Collins could be a 1,200-yard receiver. We weren't thinking that Tank Dell could be someone that would have been on pace to break some of Andre Johnson's rookie records before he got hurt. So I think C.J. Stroud is capable, even if his receivers aren't as good as some of the other teams he's facing. I think he's good enough to elevate them. What I would hope to see from the Texans is they don't ask him to elevate them and win the game all alone, because we saw that drop off last year when Tank Dell got hurt. But I think if the Texans, if the questions that you have about the Texans answer favorably and they hit their upside, the Chiefs are the only team where I have a hard time going, they can't beat them. I think there's a world
Baltimore to me is in that conversation.
And maybe that's dependent upon where the game is, because I would still have a lot of reservations about going to Baltimore.
Regardless of where you personally think Lamar is versus CJ, he ran them to death when he needed to. If he's got weapons and he gets a healthy Andrews back and he even you take OBJ's money and use it a different way and you get any of your running backs, because they lost so many with that offensive line, though they've taken some hits there too. But they still have to prove, they can stop Baltimore, and that they can also effectively score against Baltimore. That's why I can't rule them out with the Chiefs as two teams that you have to keep your closest eye on.
Yeah, no, I'm not ruling. Yeah, don't hear what I'm not saying. I'm not ruling out Baltimore. I think you know, if the Chiefs, the Ravens, and the Bengals are at their best, you certainly couldn't say the Texans should beat them, right? I think those are three teams where you could say they have an upward advantage. I'm just not ruling out the possibility of the Texans taking a step beyond and getting to their level, because I don't know, you know, what the listeners, you know, where they would have had the Texans in the preseason, but certainly they, what, doubled a lot of people's win expectations, certainly increased it by a couple at least. So if there's a, I think there's a scenario where even if we're expecting maybe the Texans take a minor step up, say we get to 11 wins, if they make the same sort of unexpected jump again.
Schedule matters, Brian. Schedule matters. They go from a cupcake to one of the toughest schedules in the NFL next year.
I find that to be overrated a little bit because we don't know who these teams are going to be. I
mean, right, but part of the reason why we felt so good about the team that turned out to be, besides CJ, was the fact that they had a schedule to where they did what they handled their business, and they won against bad teams, and they made a name for themselves. Now, instead of playing a schedule laden with bad teams, you're playing a first-place schedule with a ton more good teams, and that could be a difference maker between being 8 or 9 wins and being 10, and you say possibly going to 11 wins.
Yeah, I guess my pushback on that would be when they put out the schedule for this last season, the one they completed, we would have had the Bengals at the Bengals as an automatic loss. I mean, obviously across the board.
But you also would have had the Falcons game as a win, the Panthers game as a win.
Sure.
There were plenty where you were like, you should have steamrolled them.
But that's kind of my overall point. Is we can predict what these other teams on their schedule are going to be, but we don't know that they're actually going to hit that. We don't know that they're going to be healthy. Dak played out of his mind second half of last season. We don't know that Dak's going to stay at that level, or is he going to regress back to his career norm? We didn't know that the Bengals were going to, you know, obviously get injured and fall off. So some of these teams that we're looking at for this quote-unquote first-place schedule that seems such an impossible mountain to climb over may not be as difficult when you actually get there.
All right, we got people chiming in. Let us know. Are the Texans too high, too low? Are they right where they're supposed to be right now in terms of where do they rank in the AFC based on what we've seen so far in free agency? Who's walked out? Who's coming in? Who do you think has made them better and why? Let us know, 713-780-3776, or hit us up on Twitch or YouTube. We get the final hour of the show coming up next. We're going to talk a little bit more about this. We'll roll into another interesting conversation based on what we've already talked about with the wide receiver position. Do you feel like what they have in that room has a number one? And is he worth the money that comes with that price tag? Or do you feel like they should be looking elsewhere? We'll make a comparison and do some shopping for you as well. It's the final hour of the show coming up next. It's Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5 FM.